Islanders country, hello. This is the Isles Blog Podcast. I'm Joe Bono. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Isles Blog and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or listen at nyislesblog.com. We've been here before, a story about the Islanders and a new arena. You saw it today. Bloomberg's Scott Soshnick wrote the latest story about the Islanders in talks with the New York Mets about a new arena in Queens, that Willard Points area next to Citi Field. And Scott joins us now. Scott, this story had kind of been rumored. There was a New York Post story back in February about John Ledecky, Scott Malkin exploring other options, Queens being one of them. What have you learned in recent days regarding the relationship between the Islanders, the Wilpons, the Mets, and that Willits Point area about it actually being a viable option for the Islanders if the situation at Barclays Center does not improve and they want to look somewhere else?
Yeah, well, the most important line of demarcation, if you will, was July 1. That's when Malkin and Ledecky took over and could speak as owner of the Islanders for Charlie Long. So that's an important date when they came out, and we all know John Ledecky met with the media. Nobody's ever looking to stir up a hornet's nest. But one does have to look at the situation that they're in. It's a bit of an odd setup as it was, where they surrendered business operations control. The attendance wasn't great. The sight lines with some of the seats, I mean, and Barclays Center folks were above board. Everybody knew what they were getting. But the fact remains that any neutral observer would say that a basketball, predominantly basketball use facility with a hockey team in it, maybe isn't the best situation. So if you're now coming in after a pretty big investment in the team, you're going to look at your options and explore, how can I make things better for our customers, the fans? How do we do that? Do we look at trying to improve what we have at Barclays? That will be one option. But what if it costs too much? Who's going to pay? Is it cost prohibitive? I mean, all these things come into play. And if the answer is, well, no, then it's not feasible, then you have to look at, what are our options? What do we do? I mean, these are the steps that surely they took, and you have to be proactive with this stuff. It takes time. I mean, let's just look at NYCFC looking to get a stadium in New York City. Things just don't happen. Now, surely Bruce Ratner can tell you how hard it is to build in New York. Scott Malkin certainly knows how hard it is to build in New York. You have to be proactive and plan for all occasions and be ready to go should something need to get done.
Now, Islander fans heard for years about Charles Wong losing money. Everyone's familiar with the SMG lease at the Nassau Coliseum and how prohibitive that was. And the Islanders kind of bled money for so many years. And people looked at this unique partnership with Barclays, where the Islanders are getting, you know, $50 million plus worth of revenue from Barclays every season. But what parts of that kind of relationship, you know, maybe are something that is not enticing for Ledecky and for Malkin? Is it that it kind of puts a cap on their potential profits?
Well, look at the numbers. Let's look at numbers. What was the average attendance? Where did the Islanders rank in average attendance this past season? In the 30-team NHL, they were 28th. Now, if you're an owner of a sports team and you see that you rank 28 out of 30 in your first year in a fantastic kind of new building in a new place where there should be buzz, would that concern you?
Well, absolutely.
Okay, well, maybe yes, some maybe no. I'm guessing that Scott Malkin and John Ledecky looked at that and said, 28, can we do better? If we think we can do better, what steps do we need to take to do better? What is it? Why are we 28? Is it the sidelines? Is it the maximum capacity for hockey? Is it the borough? Is it us? Is it the players? You have to examine everything and see, what is it? What are those factors that we think are keeping us at that number 28? And then you have to look to change those factors and improve. And you can be sure they will look at, one option is altering Barclays Center. That's going to happen. That's going to, the advisors that they've hired will certainly tell them to look at what changes can be made to the building to perhaps make it a more hockey-friendly facility. But what if it doesn't work? What if it's not feasible? Then you have to go down the list of items. What can we fix? What's in our control? How do we make it better? That's just a very simple, prudent business plan.
Scott, you mentioned who they might be getting advice from, who is they kind of consulting with, and you reference in your article Irving Azoff, who people may be most recently familiar with, was kind of touted by James Dolan as potentially someone who kind of helped facilitate the Phil Jackson relationship with the Knicks CEO and
you
chairman.
You can take that, John. You can take the potentially out of that. I mean, he was crystal clear. Jim Dolan was crystal. I was at that press conference. He was crystal clear saying Irving Azoff was the man who made that happen. Without Irv, it doesn't happen. So that's it. Yes, he made it clear that his pal Irving Azoff was the reason Phil Jackson came to New York.
So you're taking a relationship with someone like that of high influence, and there were rumblings. I'm not going to ask you to confirm these, but there were rumblings that when the Islanders last year were struggling with game day operations, that they sought out some kind of consultation possibly from MSG to help out with their game day operations. What, if anything, does this kind of partnership mean for an ownership group when they seek out that kind of consulting? Is that something that ownership groups do often, or only if they're looking to do these type of potential moves or exploratory conversations?
No, I mean, owners all the time will look to – I mean, let's just look at Barclays Center. When they wanted to make sure or have a best-in-service sort of staff, they put their entire staff through Disney training. I mean, you go get the help you need. Nobody there was experts in hospitality and how to train in sort of customer service industry. Disney has an institute where they do that. So they put them through the training. If you have access to people like Irving Azoff and his experience in the music business and entertainment, and Tim Leiwicki, who ran AEG and who then ran Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, that's multiple facilities, multiple teams. If you think there's something they can help you with, why wouldn't you seek their counsel or seek somebody's counsel? Sometimes it's nice to have a set of eyes or a pair of eyes from outside the organization who maybe don't see it through the same lens and can bring a different perspective. They bring their history. They bring all that experience to what they're now looking at. Maybe it's something you won't see. Not a surprise that they would look at somebody to help them out. And certainly these are two guys who have more than made their mark in sports and entertainment.
Bloomberg's Scott Soshnick is our guest on the Isles Blog podcast. Now, I think some Islander fans, when they first heard Mets and Islanders and think Wilpons and think, would the Wilpons have anything to do with the Islanders? This would be more of a Sterling Equities real estate play for the Islanders. And what exactly is the Mets' current state, the Mets ownership group and Sterling Equities with that Willits Point area that, you know, had gotten approval for some kind of redevelopment, but really nothing has gotten going to this point?
Yeah, probably a better question for our real estate guy who followed it more closely. But I can tell you from my chats with him, it's kind of a hairy, prickly situation. It's not easy to build in New York, whether it's environmental issues, whether it's NIMBY issues, whether it's just opposition groups, plan zoning, whatever. It's not easy to build in New York. You don't just go. So as far as the particulars of where it stands from just the real estate perspective, I don't think I'm the best person. But I will tell you, as I look around the sports and entertainment industry, the idea of the communal sports and entertainment district, LA Live, what's being planned down in Tampa, an amphitheater around the stadium, that sort of community meeting place, that's something that sort of lots of owners are looking at. Patriots Place up in Foxborough. That's the thing we're seeing around. You have the Frisco development in Dallas and Jerry Jones now. It's more than just stadium. It's not enough anymore. It's stadium. It's theater. It's restaurant. It's hotel. These are complexes, entertainment complexes designed to draw people and keep them there.
And speaking of stadiums and arenas, you know, some of the arguments that people got on social media today and some of the comments were geared around, hey, there are so many arenas already in the tri-state area. The last thing New York City needs is another arena. From an ownership perspective, if you're Mikhail Prokhorov or you're James Dolan, do you need to have those two teams in the building to be successful, or can it even be a hindrance if the cost of, you know, game day operations and everything, your operating costs and budget is so high? You know, could an arena in Queens work with only one team there? You don't see many of those type of facilities anymore. And in the New York City area, obviously there are so many already that are competing for the stuff outside of sports and all the concerts and other events.
Well, you can be sure that's one of the questions that were that was posed to Messrs. Lywicki and Azoff. You can make a bet. Look at what MSG is doing right now with the Forum in L.A. That building has zero sports teams, and it's competing with Staples Center, which has, as we know, three teams for concerts. So this is the kind of thing perhaps they might be asking guys like Irving Azoff and Tim Lywicki, who know a thing or two about anchor tenants and concerts. But, gee, as far as I know, if I'm a major act, having grown up in the town of Huntington, by the way, if I'm a major act on Long Island, what is my choice? Every big act that I knew of played Nassau Coliseum, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, so what would be the option if they, you said so many arenas. That's the one. Like, people played the Coliseum. So now you'd have two. These would be two state-of-the-art concert venues to choose from. Now, does the population base of Nassau and the county, is that enough? I don't know. I don't have the answer to these things. But, hey, that's what these guys do. If they think there's a market for the product, they'll go ahead and do it. If their due diligence says that perhaps there isn't enough, we don't have enough dates to fill, we won't have enough revenue coming in, then my guess is they won't proceed with the project. But right now there's one. Is there room for two? I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see.
Scott, final question for me. You know, Malkin and Ledecky, they paid $485 million for the Islanders in 2014. That was higher than the valuation, somewhere around $325 million estimated by Forbes. They want to be a New York team. If they were to explore this opportunity and they ended up getting the green light for it and it ended up being viable, what kind of timeline on this is? We've heard about the four-year option. I'm not sure if it's a mutual option or not. Neither side has really confirmed that. But what is the timeline? When would things need to start to happen if the Islanders were to leave Barclays Center for a new arena in Queens?
You know, as with any contract, if two parties wish to change that contract and exit, they can do so. That's just basic contract law. If they want to negotiate a termination, they could certainly do that. Now, how quickly they would do that, I mean, let's be realistic. The Islanders need somewhere to play. So what's available to them, I'm not sure. But they will need an NHL-caliber arena in which to play while this stadium, if it happens, is being constructed. And that's not going to happen in 6 months. So as timetable, right now the Islanders have a place to play. It's Barclays Center. Should they choose to speed up a timetable for an exit? That's something they would have to negotiate with Barclays, and if they're amenable to an early termination, fine. Then two sides negotiate that, and they're done. If not, if this all goes away and it's not feasible, then the Islanders are still playing at Barclays Center. And my guess would be the new owners would look around and say, what do we do to make this the best hockey experience possible for our customers? But right now they're looking at a bunch of options. So this arena is just one of them. Let's see what they come up with.
Scott Soschnick, Bloomberg Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Soschnick. Thanks so much for your time, and we look forward to updates on this story as the days, weeks, and months come to follow. Thanks again.
You got it.
You've been listening to the Isles Blog Podcast. Visit nyislesblog.com for an archive of the show or subscribe to the podcast via iTunes. Follow the team on Twitter at Isles Blog and send comments to nyislesblog@gmail.com.